Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, currently based in Los Angeles, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and rural emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to extend a special thanks to Picmonic, our sponsor. If you are an OT or OTA student looking for an excellent learning resource and study aid, Picmonic might be for you, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. It is a visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams. It uses audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. If you're interested in trying it for yourself, sign up today using the link in the show notes or using the code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your Picmonic membership. Welcome back, OT friends. Today, I'd like to welcome Andrea Cordes to the podcast. Andrea applies her OT lens in training and education management. She has been a certified occupational therapy assistant since 2004. She has practiced in a variety of settings, including skilled nursing, home health, inpatient psychiatry, community-based mental health, and inpatient rehab. She has also worked as a lab instructor and fieldwork assistant in the Masters of OT program. In addition to her education, Andrea also holds a Bachelor of Science in Health Science and a Master's of Science in Higher Education Administration. She recently made the move to Massachusetts Councils on Aging as the Training and Education Manager, using her OT skills in an uncommon way. So to tell us more about her work, I'd like to welcome to the podcast Andrea Cordes. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to hear more about your uncommon role, and we'd love for you to start us off by, just telling us a little bit about yourself and some of your favorite occupations and what motivated you to contribute to our podcast.
So, like you said, I've been an OTA for 20 years now, which is amazing to say. and I've pretty much worked in every setting except for pediatrics. I did some pediatrics type things prior to my OTA life and decided that just wasn't the route I wanted to go. So I've only ever worked with 18 and over, we'll say. Let's see. Some of my favorite occupations. I love baking. Baking is one of my favorite things to do in all of my spare time. And even in my non-spare time, I will multitask by throwing cupcakes in the oven and then doing a little work and then going and getting them out of the oven, doing a little work. So baking is definitely one of my passions. I love hiking. I love yoga. I also teach yoga on the side as well. I love to read nonfiction. That's my favorite genre. Is a good memoir is something that you can always find me reading. I love traveling, all of those fun things. And what motivated me for this series? So, you know, knowing who you are as a person, I think you have done some great uncommon OT work yourself. And it intrigued me. I love sharing stories. I think that can be a really powerful thing. And I still always will love traditional OT, and I still practice in inpatient rehab on the side, per diem. But our OT skills can just go so far and are used in such a wide range that I, you know, really was excited to hear about this podcast series.
Oh, thank you so much again for coming on. Just to share with our listeners, Andrea and I know each other from my days in New York, practicing as an occupational therapist and functioning as a fieldwork instructor for the students that she sent me, because at the time you were fieldwork coordinator.
Yep, I was working in the fieldwork office for quite some time, actually.
Yeah, so we've had mutual students in the past, and just again, this occupational therapy world is such a small world that it's no surprise that we're kind of crossing each other's paths. I don't know,
Definitely.
maybe 10 years later. I don't know if
Just
that's
about,
fair to
I think it
say.
is. Yeah, I think it's about 10 years.
Too, without dating ourselves, right? Yeah, so thanks again for coming on and sharing, because this is precisely, the reason why this podcast exists, is that these opportunities exist for us, right? And it's all about how we use our skill set and our lens in that practice. So I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about what you do and whom you serve, and we'll get into all the other stuff after that.
Sure. So I currently work at the Massachusetts Councils on Aging, and we are a membership-driven nonprofit that supports all 350 Councils on Aging, also known as senior centers, in the state of Massachusetts. So that is kind of a unique entity. Not every state has one of these overseeing kind of membership-driven nonprofits in their world. So we're pretty unique ourselves. We offer educational opportunities. We help to empower and advocate for the staff at these councils on aging. And all of those people obviously are working with the older adult population, which is near and dear to my heart for years anyway. And part of me kind of what led me to that role was just their mission statement included education, empowerment, and advocacy. And like those three words are super OT, right? We do all of those things in our occupational therapy lives all the time. So I just kind of jumped right on that. And being Having been in the higher education world, I had that kind of educational background a little bit further. So educating not only patients and clients, but also, students at the master's level. So I'm able to take both my OT knowledge and my higher education knowledge and kind of apply that to this world of working with staff, who support older adults.
Fantastic. Oh, I love it. So, well, I want to hear more about what you actually do in your typical day. But first, let's take a step back and kind of how did this all pan out? So here you were working in all of these other sort of more traditional settings. And then were you looking for work? Was there sort of what signaled you to find this job, number one, and to also, realize that, okay, an OT could do this job, or were they looking for an OT to fill this position?
So over, I would say over basically my whole OTA career, I jumped on those opportunities to kind of get outside of the skilled nursing facility, get outside of the hospital and do some marketing for OT and for our organization that we were, wherever I was working at the time. So I would go to senior centers and talk about fall prevention, talk about, home safety, driving safety, things like that. I did a lot of volunteering for AARP over the years as a speaker for them. So I got into a lot of senior centers in the area. And one of the senior centers must have passed my information along to Massachusetts Councils on Aging to speak at their annual conference. So I actually ended up speaking at their annual conference, 3 times. And so that put me on their mailing list. And one day I received an email over the summer and it happened to have this job opportunity and for the training and education manager, and they weren't looking for an OT. There was nothing said occupational therapy in the actual ad. But all of the skills that were listed were things I could do. You know, they were
Yeah.
things that I've done in the past, you know, helping create a needs assessment.
Yeah.
That's OT right there, you know? So a lot of the things that I read, and then looking more into the company and seeing those words and, you know, about advocacy and empowerment. And I was like, all right, well, I mean, I don't necessarily have experience working in a senior center, but I have all this experience as, you know, my OTA life and my higher ed life. So I threw my name in the mix, and lo and behold, they actually hired me.
Oh my gosh, what a great story. Amazing. It's so inspiring. And I think when our listeners hear sort of how you came upon this position and what sort of things were going through your mind at the time, I think, yeah, many will be inspired and hopefully will follow suit, right? Because it's all about, again, the lens that we carry and how we're able to support a problem, right? How are we able to support a group? And that kind of comes first from identifying what their needs are and then coming up with a plan, right? So not everyone, I think OTs are blessed to have that, to be carrying that lens. And I love your particular example of, you know, how that, yeah, that came about for you.
It was a serendipity. That's what my boss calls it. So
I love it. Okay, so you found the job, and then now here you are. What types of things do you do there in an everyday? Can you tell us a little bit about your typical day at work?
So a typical day is never typical. I do a lot of different things, a lot of different times of day. You know, I do work from home, which is also amazing. But I communicate with a lot of the different directors and assistant directors, outreach coordinators, program managers, all the different key players in the Councils on Aging. Most recently, I shared a survey with them to do my needs assessment to figure out what types of learning they, you know, experiences they wanted, how they wanted to receive those online, in person, asynchronously, synchronously, all that good stuff. So sometimes I'm, you know, creating a new opportunity. Sometimes I am creating a registration form for that opportunity. Other times I'm, you know, maintaining the database of attendance to trainings. I also, some of the things that I love are getting to go out to the Councils on Aging themselves. We had one that had a, you know, a big event because they got a national certification. So we all went to that, and you know, getting to see the amazing work that they do at senior centers. It's just incredible the things that they offer to their communities. You know, a lot of people think, well, they just play bingo there or they have an exercise class, but you know, no, they're out there helping people get their SNAP benefits or, you know, qualifying for different health insurance programs. They're helping them navigate the system. You know, they do incredible work there. So they deserve the support. They deserve the empowerment and advocacy. A fun thing we're doing actually tomorrow is Older Adult Lobby Day. So we're all going into Boston and talking to our legislators about, you know, getting more for our older adults in their communities to support them.
Oh,
So,
that's the
but yeah,
advocacy part.
every day is a little different, which is kind of fun.
So when you say we're all going, who do you mean?
So it's, you know, the whole Department of Massachusetts Councils on Aging. There's about 10 of us. And then we actually have, I think, 500 folks registered from across the state. There's a lot of Councils on Aging that are bringing vans with
Oh.
their own members. So older adults will be there to talk with their senators and representatives, you know, senior center directors, program managers, all of them. Yeah. So it'll be a big, one big party in Boston.
Oh, wow. Well, sounds like it's going to be a really powerful experience. And Just also something that kind of ties in again the mission of the company and like the people who actually work there get to experience this together.
Right, definitely.
Oh, so tell us what inspired you to do this work. I know you shared a little bit about how this was a population that was sort of dear to you, and this was always, kind of where you saw your heart. Was there anything in particular that inspired you to work with this group?
I always loved being in the senior centers and interacting with the folks who came in there and just seeing the variety that is offered for them in their, their monthly calendars. They've got support groups and all of that. And I thought, well, that's a kind of a neat thing. And then being able to support it a little bit more broadly even is really cool. I think I had mentioned to you previously that one of the reasons that I stepped away from the university was, like you had said, I'm an occupational therapy assistant and I was working in a master's of OT program. So I, which was super cool that I was an OTA teaching MOT students at that level and working with them as a lab instructor. But I had kind of like maxed out where I could be at the university because I am an OTA, unless I wanted to go back to school and become an OTR and subsequently get my OTD, I would have really been able to just kind of stay where I was. So it was a little stagnant. I definitely, I'm still tied to the university. I'm still adjuncting, so they can't get rid of me yet. But yeah, it was a decision I made for myself because, I wanted to grow. I wanted to do more and to be able to support more individuals. And I feel like this way I'm able to support a lot of them,
Yes. And I just feel that, for the agency, number one, to have your lens, again, talking about this lens, right? But to have your lens and your perspective and having that to support their mission, they're already in a much, much better place, right? And on another note, there's this idea of you having this skill set and having this passion in, for teaching, and you're kind of getting a mix of both, right? So I love it. It's, I think, like you said, it's serendipitous. It's, it's happened a few times on this podcast, not to make yours any less, wonderful, but folks talk about, well, this kind of led to that, right? And me, spending a few years in this kind of setting and that kind of setting just kind of helped me progress into this setting. So, I say that too to remind our listeners that you don't necessarily just kind of jump into these roles from the get-go. And if you do, that's okay too. But sometimes it takes a few years to kind of figure things out and to feel really comfortable with it. What do you think?
I agree. I agree. I definitely loved going right from OTA school into clinical practice, starting off in a continuous care rehab center where I got to see every aspect of OT, basically from outpatient to hospice, and home care and everything in between. It was great. And I loved having that clinical experience. And I really even felt like I needed that clinical experience before I had the higher education experience, I always appreciated that I still maintained practice while I taught so that I could, work a Saturday at the inpatient rehab and come in on Monday with a new story to share with my students, So I think my path was definitely strategic. Like I did the whole clinical practice. I transitioned to the educational role, but maintained the clinical practice. And now I'm kind of transitioning into that non-traditional OT role where it seemed like a natural progression for me. I don't know.
Yes, but I also like that you're kind of flowing from one role to another as you need to.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Oh, I love it. So I'm super happy for you, and again, excited that it's yeah, excited that you've been able to kind of bridge everything together because that's not easy to do. And it's, a question that I get all the time, like, how do you do that? It's like, there isn't really an answer, a
Right.
direct answer, right? It has a lot to do with your passions and your experiences and certainly trying things first, right? Because you just really don't know what it's going to be like until you're working in that setting, and whether it's something that's going to be for you or not. That's certainly been a realization for me, a few times during my career. So I'm happy that yours has come into this sort of happy balance right
Yes.
now. Oh, so let's switch gears and talk about some recent highs and maybe some challenges that you've recently had in your new role.
Definitely. I think I'm still riding this high from a few weeks ago. I sent out a survey to, to the entire network. And our by network, our membership is, all the COA staff and directors around the state of Massachusetts. And I think the survey went to about 800 or 900 individuals. And I think within the first 24 hours, I had 150 responses, which I thought was pretty good, considering. And I think now I'm up to about 250, and it closes on Friday, so I'm very excited about that. And I'm nerdily, if that's a word, excited to, crunch the data and see, like, what are people looking for? What are they looking for in training? What are they looking for format and delivery?
Yes.
One of the other things that's under my training and education manager role is a certification that we have for directors so that they can, get this title of being a certified director because they've gone above and beyond and done this little extra piece of work. So
Yes.
that's a cool program that we have. So yeah, my survey is probably my biggest high. My most recent high is that.
Wow, congratulations on the
Thank you.
response.
Yes,
Okay.
yes.
And as you were sharing kind of your process, like I just couldn't help but think, oh, such an OT, just
Yep.
thinking about how do you want your education delivered? What works for you, right? Just like really asking those super important questions.
Right.
So yeah, they're very fortunate to have you.
Thank you. let's see. Probably a low or a challenge that I've come up with is, like I mentioned before, I've been in a lot of senior centers, but I've never worked in a senior center. So it's been quite a learning curve for me, knowing like the acronyms that they use, learning about the funding that they receive, how they receive different grants that they might receive, different government funding that they receive, how they use things, what types of, reporting that they have to do. A lot of language that is new to me from not having worked in a council on aging. So that's definitely been a learning curve, but I'm extremely lucky to have amazing supportive coworkers who are teaching me. I absorb every moment I can. If somebody's, got a Zoom on their calendar that looks interesting to me, I might send them a message and say, "Hey, do you mind if I creep on your Zoom so I can learn a little bit more about your program?" Because I feel like that's the best way to learn is to hear what other people are doing. And so I would say that's my biggest challenge is the learning curve of not having that senior center specific background. But I also feel like that was to my advantage when I started because I came in with a clean slate and a new lens. So it was a nice transition to be able to learn all of that, but not feel having preconceived notions about it already. So it was nice, it was a challenge and a high, a positive. So.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, I'm sure that's why you're there, right? It's to try to answer some of these questions. And I find it even extra interesting because you're working with the staff actually, right? Like not necessarily the seniors. It's really the staff, and that also requires just management skills, just lots of communication skills, I'm guessing, right? Just really so that you can get your point across properly.
And I've learned that senior center directors are probably some of the hardest working people you'll ever meet. They wear so many hats on a daily basis that and they definitely don't get the credit they deserve. They are out there, answering phones. They are sometimes serving the meals because they had somebody call out, or maybe that's just their staffing pattern. They're out there answering every senior's question that comes in the door. They are out there organizing activities and organizing transportation and, finding resources for family members, all in a 2-hour time span. Like they're doing it
Yes.
all. So they're out there working hard. And a really cool thing is that in the time that I've been with MCOA, I've found that we have at least one OT who is a senior center director, and there is also one who is a PT.
Oh,
I know.
interesting.
I will have to hook you up
Yes, please do. Maybe we can do a
with
little kind of, group
Right.
podcast conversation.
Yeah.
So do we know much? I'm already so intrigued. Like, do we know how long have they had the position? Have they been there for a while?
I think the one who's a PT has only been there a couple of years, and the one who's an OT has been there for a few years. And I do know that both of them have their OT and PT credentials listed in their email signatures, so they must still be maintaining their licensure. And who knows, maybe they moonlight on the side like I do, patient care or something. But yeah, it's pretty cool that there's other rehab healthcare professionals out there. Working in the world of councils on aging too.
Yeah, I just find that fascinating. I think you guys should start a little club, a
Yeah.
little rehab, a rehab club on the
We might
side,
have
and
to.
plan out, how can the rehab aspect of things be expanded? And oh my gosh, I'm already thinking like fieldwork students, maybe, that's a sounds like already like such a, again, non-traditional role, but it
Right.
would really,
It's funny
just
you say that about
facilitate.
students because we used to take students to a few of the senior centers in the area around the university. And so a lot of times they would say, well, how do I get to work in one like all the time? Because they had such a great time because, the older adults that come in are just so happy to see the students. And, they almost want to teach them more than the students want to teach the older adults because it's that intergenerational connection is so powerful, and I think it's a
It
great thing to have college students, even at the undergrad level or the grad level, going into councils on aging and helping out. There's so many different things that they could do,
Yes.
for sure.
So, oh, the potential. I could see this growth happening. So let's switch gears and talk about money matters. I know you mentioned that it's a nonprofit, right? And can you share with us anything you feel comfortable with about money matters, how you're compensated, whether it's, it's a nonprofit, so I'm assuming they're sort of functioning through grants and some private funding. And you talked about membership. Share anything you wish.
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit. We do receive some grant funding from the Executive Office of Elder Affairs, which is, government. We do receive dues from our membership. So there's a big pot of money there. But I, to be honest, I had a pay increase from working in higher education to go to this non-traditional role. And part of that, I think, was again because I was an occupational therapy assistant working in a master's level program. I think there was A little bit of a disconnect with salary based on that. So moving into this role, I was able to take a pay increase and also work from home, which has been amazing too. Don't knock that as a true benefit. So there's something really nice about rolling out of bed and walking upstairs. There's opportunity costs, like again, like I took a pay increase, but if you're seeking out a non-traditional role, think about those opportunity costs, like is your commute substantially less? Is there less stress? Is there more flexibility in your schedule? Is there, all of those things need to be taken into consideration if you're considering switching roles to a more non-traditional role and not always thinking about just the money, right? But yeah, I was lucky. I was definitely lucky for that.
Well, again, it sounds like your background and your passions kind of collided there. And, between that and your networking, it just became it just became a clear match,
It
right?
definitely was.
And again, that's not very common. That also in itself is uncommon, but I love that you shared that about, really actually getting an increase in pay as a result of the move, and also feeling like you have more sort of time and flexibility with your schedule, which I can, really empathize with those who do not. I'm currently in a full-time situation, and it's taking up a lot of my energy, and it's a lot. So I appreciate what you're sharing about being able to work from home, maybe being able to juggle a couple of things, and really kind of having that flexibility.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. Like even the travel that I do around the state is, to where I feel like I can get to and when I can get to that certain place. I've been to, let's see, I've been coloring in a map. So far I've been to four different senior centers across the state, but I have several others on my list for the next coming months. I decided not to color in the ones I've already been to prior to my role because I want that map to be fully colored by things that I'm just doing for MCOA.
Oh, got it. Oh my gosh, that's going to be an interesting revelation. Just kind of what you see. But I love that they're also giving you, and that's part of your role, right? And again, it's so OT. Like, it's so I don't even need to hear more. I already know how you would function in such a place. Like, and then you're being tasked going to as many of these, places as possible to try to identify what is the best way for them to function. What is,
Well,
what's
and
a
we have
better
a
way for that
saying,
system?
if you've seen one senior center, you've seen one senior center. So
Interesting. What does that mean?
they are all completely different. There's some that are in more rural communities where maybe it's a room that they have share in shared space. They might have one part-time employee that does everything for that senior center
Got
versus
it.
another senior center that might have, they might serve 5,000 older adults in the course of a month or two, and they have a full-time director, a full-time assistant director, a program manager, two van drivers, a volunteer coordinator. They have programming in the evening, So every senior center, while they are still able to offer similar offerings like meal programs and transportation and assistance with benefits, they might also offer completely different things. One might have a pickleball court, one might have a billiards room. One might have, a movie screen that they bring in for once a month, One might be more heavy with support groups. So there's so many different things that the different centers offer that you could see 350 different centers in the state of Massachusetts.
Wow.
So that's
You
why it's
have,
my goal to see all of them.
yeah, your lens is the best for those situations. Well, if you had any other career advice for any of our listeners who might be interested in, following down your path.
I would say don't put the word occupational therapy in your job search because it's going to limit you to strictly clinical roles or
Yes.
perhaps management roles, maybe. But if you put in things that you're passionate about or put in things that are skills that you have, put in the word advocacy, can guarantee you'll find 30 jobs that are that would not come up if you put in occupational therapy. Put in different keywords to your job search that don't necessarily say occupational therapy. They might say a skill or, something different, or just even find what you're passionate about and look that way. If there's a population that you really love to work with, even if it's indirectly, kind of like I do, there's ways to do that. Maybe you need to work doing some kind of research for the population that you're looking at. There's just so many opportunities out there that I think people are missing because they're putting OT in their job search.
Yes, and in fact, that's kind of boxing us in into these more traditional roles. Thank you so much for those ideas and such great advice. If our listeners were interested in reaching out, asking you a few questions about your role, would that be okay if they did?
Absolutely, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn, Andrea Cordes, and I have a very simple email address. It's Andrea@mcoaonline.com. So pretty simple. I also have my own podcast that I do with a friend that we interview OTs, not necessarily only in non-traditional roles, but we started the podcast Conversations with an OT actually during COVID as kind of a way to allow some of our OT students to hear from different practitioners. Like, often in the fieldwork office, you would hear somebody say, "Well, I really want to work in pediatrics, but my placements are in inpatient rehab and, community-based mental health with adults. So how am I ever going to learn what a pediatric OT does in real life?" So we kind of started this podcast interviewing people who work in A lot of them work in traditional OT settings, but some non-traditional. And they talk about their OT journey, where how they got where they are today. And it always surprises the students that maybe they didn't have a fieldwork placement in the practice setting that they're currently working in, but oh my gosh, their skills are translatable, so they can work in that setting. It's kind of the same with uncommon OT stuff, like your skills are translatable. So,
It
yeah, you
sure
can
is.
find Conversations with an OT on Spotify too.
Okay, we will list your podcast on our show notes so that folks can have a listen. I love it. I love that, I love that OTs are out there spreading the word, different ways that we can be OTs. The more, the merrier.
Definitely.
This is exactly what we want to sort of amplify out there for others, right? That you have the skill set to be able to translate your OT skills into whatever, that setting might require because you're identifying needs and you're going to come up with a realistic game plan based on what you've identified, right? And the conversations with, the folks who were there. So thanks so much for sharing with us your path, your journey so far. I love that, this is just the beginning being in
Oh,
this role.
definitely.
And I could already, I see your eyes lighting up. I know our listeners can't see that, but I'm sure they can hear it in your voice. But yeah, when you talk about your work, I could see the passion. I could see the intention that, you really want to be able to, serve this population. And I love that you're serving the providers, which will then, the training that they get will exude towards, being able to serve that population that's dear to you. So thank you for taking the time to share all of that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.